my appreciation to the organizers, many of whom I have written papers with, for inviting me to the conference and for organizing the conference in the first place. And it's good to see all of these good friends out here. I was told I had to wear a name tag, so I'm wearing my name tag. If you aren't up close, you probably can't see it's the wrong name tag. That's because they gave me a temporary name tag. I also was told that after I'd given a talk, I didn't have to wear a name tag anymore. I was also told that I should wire myself, and I can't quite do that. But I'm from Rutgers, and our women are going to make the final four, so I thought I would show a little solidarity. Okay, so the first thing I want to explain about my talk is that it's joint work, and it's joint with Willie Cortinas, Christian Hazemeyer, and it's based on three papers. So the extra lichting is the extra letter in this. And this also has a complicated title, which I'm going to get wrong, but it's on the web, and it's number 700 and, did I write this down? 722 on the K-Theory server. And it has been accepted and will appear, I hope, later this year by the Annals. So this is the paper where we introduce the basic notions of this field of development. Then there's one which Christian Hazemeyer wrote about last year, and it is number 783, and it's going to appear in the Journal of the AMS. And then there's another one which is from February 07, and it is number 824. So if you have your laptops open, you can go look all of this good stuff up and be educated about it. Okay. So the question that motivated this talk is a question of Bass, and he said, if Kn of Re is isomorphic to Kn of R T1, T2, no, excuse me, there's something missing from this. I guess the easiest way to do it is this way. And although he was not Hispanic, I have learned that that's a useful tool. So the techniques that we have been using are only good in characteristic zero. And so the rest of this talk, now he made this conjecture for any ring. So from this point on, all rings are Q algebras. And Q is going to contain the field F of characteristic zero, of course. And anytime I write X, it'll be a scheme of finite type over F. The reason for all of this setup is because we have this CDH topology. Thank you very much, Max. If you fix a field and you work with schemes of finite type over F, then there's a topology which was introduced by Voivodsky in the beginning of the program for developing motivic cohomology. And so there are two types of covers involved. And the Russian name for Nisnevich is CD. And the H covers were part of Voivodsky's thesis, and so the word CDH is an amalgamation of these two. The basic idea here is that if you have, I guess, something which is proper, and x tilde minus z tilde, so z tilde would be the thing that would be the pullback, is isomorphic to x minus z, and that's not true unless I write reduced, so REU. So that's what the H covers are. So if you have a blow up square, abstract blow up square like this, an H cover is that Z and X tilde cover X. And the idea is that in characteristic zero, locally everything is smooth. No, I need characteristic zero to quote what's in those other papers, and those other papers need characteristic zero to quote, for example, Cartinius's proof of the Cabbie conjecture, and I also need characteristic zero in a moment to talk about Adams' operations and logarithms and exponentials. So, okay, so this is going to come up, and the work that we did with Schlichting says the following sort of a thing. If I look at the Kähler differentials, so this is a sheaf, and I'll write K here. So you can alternatively think that K is the rational number, so K is the field F. And this is a Zariski sheaf. If you restrict yourself to the smooth guys, then this is actually a CDH sheaf. And so if I invent some notation here, so FCH over F A to, so CDH, FCH over F Zariski. So if I restrict the singular schemes, this is not going to be a CDH sheaf, but the cohomology and the CDH topology of X with coefficients in omega I CDH is quasi-coherent. So that means if you're in a situation where you have a spec of a ring, then these are R modules. And in fact, if I were working over F, they would be actually finitely generated R modules, coherent modules. But since I need to be working where, in the case where K is equal to the rational numbers, and K is something over the complex numbers, this will definitely not be finitely generated. And so omega I CVH means A lower star of A upper star of omega I. So it's a sort of a standard thing that if you have a sheaf, and you sheafify it, but you're still thinking of the same topology, then you... All right. Okay, so... It's so standard in this field that I get it wrong. Thank you. Okay, so so if I take the complex numbers and I look at algebras over that, then this is true. So the reason they need infinite transcendence degree is because if you take Hochschild homology of the complex an algebra over the complex numbers, but you take the Hochschild homology, the Kähler differentials over the rational numbers, then you have copies of all of the Kähler differentials for all lower degrees of the ring sitting in there. So that's the reason why we need infinite transcendence degree. So if you want to work on this particular subject, if I have a functor like K, then it's useful to cross X with the affine line and mod out by K of X. So if X is a speck of a field, speck of a ring, then X cross A1 just means speck of RT. Yes, it means all integers n. Yes, in fact, also for negative guys. Does not apply to real numbers. Okay, so so the theorem is that for an X or an R in the setting, so let me call it an X, Kn of X is isomorphic to Kn of X cross affine P space if and only if Nkn of X equals Nkn minus 1 of X equals Nk of N minus P probably plus 1. So let's test this. Let's see what happens when P equals 2. For every n. Thank you, Mark. Yes. Yes. Fix n, and then this is a true statement. In Bass's conjecture, he's asking for all n and all r. So in this theorem, I'm saying it for all n. Let r be a ring. And n an integer. Boom, boom. Okay? So this is the actual criterion that we know. Is Bass's conjecture true or false? We don't actually know, but here's a fun example. Yes, but then we're talking about negative k-theory. It's a good thing the audience is on top of me. Okay, so here's a dueling dragon example. So suppose that X is an elliptic curve over a number field, and L is a line bundle, where L tensor 3 is isomorphic to OX, trivial. And then I want to let Y be what's usually called spec of OX plus L. So this means that locally you're just taking a nilpotent extension. It's locally the dual numbers. Locally it's the dual numbers over spec of R, where R is the coordinate ring of the elliptic curve. And it's patched together according to the fact that L tensor cubed is equal to 0. Then NK7 of Y is equal to 0, but NK6 of Y is not equal to 0, and so therefore K7 of Y not isomorphic to K7 of Y cross 8. So that shows that Bass's conjecture really has something to do with rings. affine varieties rather than something to do with all projective varieties. So, I mean, once you know something is true for a reduced scheme, then you can jazz it up and get more complicated examples. But this is pretty simple. And I call it a dueling dragon example because I figured this example out a year ago when I was stuck waiting for my kids to ride a particular roller coaster ride called the Dueling Dragon. And they rode it for about 4 hours. And I had to sit and wait for 4 hours with nothing better to do than to come up with a counterexample. So there it is. Sorry? L tensor 2 is no. This is a three torsion point on the curve. So if you take, for example, a Fermat curve, x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed is equal to 0, then you can find a point of order 3. And the divisor of that point would be, subtract off the base point to get a divisor of degree 0. That would be such a thing. Okay? Okay. So that's the main result and in the direction of Bass's conjecture. But here's another fun thing. And this, for this year anyway, is my favorite formula. So if I take n k0 of x, let's make it a ring R to be safe. Then it's going to be a big sum of things, tensor over Q C Q T. And the first thing is R plus mod R, and the second thing is the first CDH cohomology. You know what? I'm going to be sloppy. I'm going to write R here instead of spec of R. Of omega 1 plus h d minus 1 cdh of R with coefficients in omega d minus 1. So this is nk0 in degree 1 of R, and that also has a name. It's called n pick of R. And this one is where the atoms operations are acting as chi squared, and this is the one where the atoms operations are acting as k to the d. So in short, what I'm giving you is the decomposition according to the eigenvalues of the atoms operations. At the same time, there's another bigrading. So this is bigraded. I will get to that. But I wanted to give you, did I make a mistake? Is it too low? No, you can see it. So R plus is a semi-normalization of R reduced. And here's a theorem. It says that the global sections of R or X with coefficients in the structure sheaf is R plus. And that's where it comes in. It comes in because it is the global sections for the CDH topology. The CDH topology has for its basic rings semi-normal rings. And in fact, this is true for schemes, of course. D is the dimension of the ring. Thanks. So if you go back in time to the beginning of K-theory, when Quillen announced all of this stuff, and then forward in time 10 years to when Kratzer and Hiller published this stuff, you'll discover that the range of where the eigenvalues of the atoms operations are basically go in a range of D things. And that's the range that you're seeing. So let me do another variation of this. K1, 1 of R. This is the units of R. So let me write U of R for a second. So when you're looking at K1, the analogous thing would have units floating around somewhere. And what is NK1? Well, we don't really want all of NK1. We just want the part in weight 1. And if you let I be the nil radical of the ring, then it's the polynomials with constant coefficient 1, which are congruent to 0, or the polynomials which are congruent to 1 modulo the nil radical. And if I take this formula, and I take the logarithm, then because I'm in characteristic 0, this is an isomorphism. And I want to think of this as being I tensored with T, Q, T over Q, in order to give you an idea where that T, Q, T comes from. Okay? You can also see from this example, and thinking about what happened to characteristic P with truncated vit vectors and whatnot, that the formula characteristic P is going to be a little bit different. So since I've mentioned this one, I should tell you what is the formula for NK1. Of R. So it'll be, again, a big bracket of things tensored with TQT. So the nil radical plus the first CDH cohomology of omega. Whoops. Wait. No. Omega 1 CDH of R modulo the Kähler differentials of R. Oh, by the way, I have stopped writing the field as a subscript, and the reason I'm not writing the field as a subscript is because from here on out the field is always going to be the rational numbers. And the reason that you can see that it's the rational numbers is if you have a nilpotent ideal, what does Goodwillie's theorem tell you? It tells you the relationship between K-theory of the nilpotent ideal and the cyclic homology and Hochschild homology of the ring taken over Q. So the base is going to be Q for if I don't write it down. Right. Here comes the H1 CDH of R with coefficients in omega squared. And here comes HD minus 1 CDH of R with coefficients in omega B. And then we have to slug on this thing. Oops. At this point, you start to notice that it's annoying to keep writing that tensor TQT down there. So let me explain that there's a bigrating. Going on. So the first observation is that NKN of R or X is a Q-vector space. And that was something that was worked out essentially by Jan Steenstra in the late 70s and developed at the early 80s by a lot of people, including myself. So that means I can talk about the set of all x in kn of x such that psi to the k of x is equal to k to the I times x for all k. And that's well defined as an eigenspace. And then the K-theory of X is a finite sum of copies of these things. So that's part of the grading. Oh, and by the way, here's another theorem. If n is less than 0, then kn parentheses I of r is equal to 0 for I is equal to 0. Whoops. Strictly less than 0. And kn 0 of r is the CDH cohomology n with coefficients in Q. So if you are not looking at nk, but you're looking at the regular k groups, what you typically have to do is tensor over z with irrational numbers to get a rational vector space, and then take the eigenspaces. But anyway, the point is that when you're looking at negative k theory, you don't have any eigenspaces in negative dimensions, and this was something that was conjectured in 1990, and so that's okay too. Okay, well, I was explaining the bigrading and I got halfway through. So there's the bigrading, and here you're seeing the bigrading according to the Adams operations. So this is space where psi to the k is equal to k. Here's the space where psi to the k is equal to k squared. And in general, when you see omega I, it's the eigenspace where psi to the k is k to the I plus 1. So a useful little trick here is to look at the second. Well, how do you define the Adams operations for negative k theory? So this is a sort of like a little aside, and I'm going to spend 2 minutes telling you about this without writing anything down. Okay? So the Adams operations are defined on k0 by taking exterior products of projective modules, and they're defined on k1, k2, k3 by looking at topological constructions on BGL+. But if you want to construct Adams operations on negative k theory, then you're stuck, because the constructions of negative K-theory due to, I don't know, Karubi, Weibull, other people, all of these constructions run into problems when you try to construct Adams operations on them. And so what you have to do instead is you have to tensor with Q and then use the operation psi to the K times a T, so you use the fundamental theorem to jack something up into degree K0. And then in K0, you know what its eigenvalue is, and then you just subtract off the n. So a priori, for example, if you had something in the Picard group of something, then in nk minus 2, it would be in negative degrees. And that's a bad thing. Right. So These CDH cohomology groups with the rational numbers, that's constant coefficients, that's getting us back into the realm that Suslin and Voivodsky initially set up the CDH topology, was to look at precedes with transfers, which were homotopy invariant and locally constant. And so so rigidity theorem applies to this and all kinds of things like this. These omega I's, I didn't say this, but these omega I's are precedes with transfers. The only problem is that they're not homotopy invariant. So from the standpoint of homotopy theory of schemes, in other words, the theme of this week, these guys are precedes with transfers, but they're not homotopy invariant, and that's how they fit into the overall theme of the week. Okay, so the other bigrading. So there are operations on the K-theory, the nil K-theory of a ring, and so if you let S be T to the N, maybe N is a bad letter, then this is a polynomial ring, and this is a polynomial ring, and it induces maps on NK of R to NK of R, and in this direction, this is the Frischebung, and in this direction, this is the Frobenius, and then there's another map and that is, if you let S be equal to R times T, then you get the homophily. Brackets R. R and R. And so these operations fit together, and they give you the action of a continuous module over the ring of big Wittbeckers. But bigger than that, they give you on the Cartier operations, the finite Cartier operations. All Cartier operations would involve power series, and here we're looking at Cartier polynomials, so that there's row and column finiteness in the usual Cartier expansion. What this does is it gives an expansion, so you get the eigenvalue. So the set of all x in NK of R or X, such that the homophily on X is multiplication by N times X. And these things are permuted. By the Frischebung and the Frobenius. And since I'm in characteristic zero, what happens is that the Frischebung dilates things by a factor of M, and the Frobenius brings them back by a factor of M. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write T, K, N of R for this space. Wait a second. So let's just invent a place where I can stick. I don't like this being the same as that. So let's change this index and maybe a bracket on. Okay, so that's an ad hoc notation, but what I really want to do is write TKN of R for the typical piece, where N is equal to zero. Oops, I is equal to zero. And the theorem that you have is that a continuous module, so continuous module like these things, is naturally isomorphic to the typical piece tensored with the T, Q, T, and the VM and the FM are only acting here. And they're acting trivially on the typical piece. Wait a second. VM is going to replace T by T to the M. And FM is going to replace, in the typical piece, it's going to, the typical piece is only going to be things divisible by M, so it's going to divide by M. And the other one is then you have to play this. This is a combinatorial game, which I will get wrong if I try to do the subscripts. Basically, what you do is you write M as equal to a number prime to I times M times the number that you're dilating by to some power, and then you divide by that. That's right. So in the example of the units here, let's see if I got this right. In the example of the units, what you're looking at are the things of the form e to the t r, where r is nilpotent. So these will be your typical units of r. And I probably should not have used r. Let's use A. Okay, so if you replace T by A, then what's happening is the same thing as replacing A by T, so I probably want A equals 1 here. So whatever the indices are, they have to work out to be compatible with this particular case. All right, so this little trick gives me a natural grading on these modules that I'm looking at. So I have two natural gradings, and you see them reflected in this example here, that this is the part one. So this nil radical is sitting here. This is the part in Adams degree one, and it's the typical piece. And this little factor of the tensor TQT is just to account for this theorem. And so from now on, I'm just going to be talking about the typical pieces of things, because there's less writing. So So what I want to do is draw a very quick chart. Of the TKNIs. So here is going to be K0 line. So I've already explained to you that r plus mod r is sitting there, and the nil radical of r is sitting there. So what goes here is the h1 cdh of o. So what I'm doing is I'm now dropping off the subscript cdh and the capital R parentheses. h2 of o down to hd minus 1 of o. So this is sitting in degree, wait a second, I'm doing the typical part. So here I'm talking about the typical part of NK0 in this row. So here I have H1 of omega 1, and here I have HD minus 1 of omega D minus 1, and here I have HD minus 1 of omega D. That's in the row for K1. And then things start to go up diagonally in this direction. And there's nothing up here. K1, K2, K3. What I have here is hard to read because that's... All right, so it's Hochschild 1, 2 of the ring. Here I have the torsion in the Kähler differentials. Here I have the torsion in the Kähler differentials second. Here I have omega 2, CDH modulo omega 2. Here I have omega 1, CDH modulo omega 1. Here I have H1 of omega 2. And so here you have HP CDH of R with the coefficients in omega Q. And up here you have Hochschild homology. And that's the way that all of the typical pieces work. And it explains, so the NU is explained right here. The formula for K0 is explained by this line. And if you're in negative K3 land, everything is explained by these CDH cohomology groups. And if you're up high, then everything is explained by Hochschild homology groups. Now you have to be a little bit careful, and that is that if you're over the complex numbers, then all of these omega q's are going to be non-zero for all positive numbers q. And so what that means is that this diagonal line will remain non-trivial out to infinity. And then what you see is the vanishing line for Hochschild. So you can get some small improvements here. If you look at Hochschild 1, 2, that's going to vanish if and only if you have a complete intersection. And so there are strong connections between all of this material and some conjectures in commutative ring theory. For example, Berger's conjecture is telling you stuff about the torsion and the Kayla differentials there. And this is, of course, NK2. It's going to have the torsion and the Kayla differentials. So Berger's conjecture is going to tell you something about this. Rodiccio's conjecture is going to tell you stuff about this. And we have conjectures about this. Torsion. Kayla differentials of R is an R module. So let's suppose for the second that R is a reduced ring. So if you have a reduced ring and a module over that ring, then you know what the torsion submodule is. It's the stuff which is annihilated by a non-zero element, a non-zero divisor. Right? So that's sort of like smaller support. It's the stuff that has associated primes if you're in good commutative ring theory territory. Okay, so now I successfully put off how to prove all of this stuff for 45 minutes, so I better get to work. So I was told that the audience would only stay awake while I was presenting theorems and results. So I got you to stay awake for a major part of my talk. Oh, I didn't say this. Maybe I should say this. In this range, it's easy to show that the horizontal grading is according to the atoms' decompositions. But in this range, in order to show that the decomposition really is given by the atoms' decompositions, you need that preprint on infinitesimal cohomology that we came out with in February. And that was the reason why we wrote that other paper. Where? Okay, so this is I equals 1, this is I equals 2, I equals 3, I equals D, etc. No. Okay, Tomas, is this going to make you happier? So in the interest of putting a chart on one blackboard, I dropped off lots of stuff. I dropped off the CDH, I dropped off the R comma, and I dropped off the tensor Q2. Yeah. So the way to understand this is to look at this row and compare, well, I guess this row is this row. You see how it goes? This is a lot of information in a short amount of space. So it's abbreviated a lot. Okay, so FK is the homotopy fiber of this. H of X is going to be the homotopy fiber of H of X to CVH of X with coefficients H. So I have to say some words here. And the magic word is Rick Jardine theory. So H is some functor. So one thinks of it as a presheaf. And in this particular application, it's a presheaf of spectra. In the other applications, it's going to be a presheaf of chain complexes. And I'm taking that and thinking of it as a presheaf of spectra, a presheaf of chain complexes, on the category smooth over SCH over F, schemes of finite type over F. And I'm endowing that with the CDH topology, so that gives me a closed model structure on the category of presheaves. According to the closed model structure, I am then allowed to take a fibrant replacement, and this is the fibrant replacement for that model. So this is the fibrant replacement. So I should also say that André Joyal did this in a general topos also, right? So I'm sorry, André, I forgot you. Fibrant replacement of the presheaf H for the CDH model structure on presheaves over S CH over F. So there's a theorem of Hazemeyer, in fact it's his thesis, that says that if you do this construction with K-theory, then you get homotopy K-theory. Okay? And so we are not looking at this per se, we're not looking at this per se, we're going to be looking at the homotopy fibers. But I will tell you the following thing. I am saying that's Hazemeyer's theorem, yes. H is any presheaf of spectra or of chain complexes. Now, I'm scaring people because I'm writing the word spectra, so let me back off. Maybe I'm not because this is homotopy week, but let's talk about HH of X. So this means the chain complex. So when one does this and talks to algebraic geometers, one always has to remember which way one writes this. So this is concentrated in degree zero. Okay, so there's a chain complex, and you're allowed to apply all of this machinery to it, but it's a familiar machinery in this context, because in this context, we're just doing Grothendieck-style hypercohomology for a topos, which is the CDH topology, and so this is just hypercohomology. And so what the CDH of the H business is doing just an injective resolution, and then by plugging in an X, we're taking global sections for the injective resolution. So this is now a chain complex of abelian groups whose cohomology is going to give you the CDH cohomology, hypercohomology with coefficients in that chain complex. So in that land, it's a very familiar thing to a different body of people. But the point is, the CDH topology is locally smooth. I wrote that up there. Locally, everything is smooth. Because everything is locally smooth, and we know that the Hochschild homology of a smooth variety is just Kähler differentials, then that means that if I do this funny construction with HH, this is the product of the, omega I shifted I times. And so it's really just giving you Kähler differentials, and so if I want to put a number here, H M CDH. I'm sorry about writing so low. I'm going to raise it up in just a moment. This will be the product of the H M minus I of X coefficients of omega I. Zariski. Wait a second. No, CDH. Is that legible? So that's the CDH cohomology of X coefficients in omega I. So the point of this is just that although the machinery is very scary, when you reduce it down to homological things, you're just doing homological algebra. And I like homological algebra. Well, so here is are we algebraic geometers or topologists this week? The shift goes one way for topologists and the other way for algebraic geometers. And so right now you're sitting next to two topologists, and so you're outnumbered. The way to think of this is that the omega i's are going to live back here in degree minus I. And in order to say something in degree minus I is something that's concentrated in degree minus I, you put a brackets I on it, don't you?
Yeah.
So we're all happy now about these indices? Good. Okay. So here we have the Chern character, which I guess in this guise was essentially written down by Combs and Kurubi, but not recognized as such, and then recognized as such by Hood and Jones, and maybe by Tom Goodwillie. Over here, I would normally write periodic cyclic homology, but I don't. And the point is that that's not the right thing to put down, and that caused me some grief for a long time. This is the thing which is homotopy Cartesian square. Now, because we have homotopy Cartesian squares, the fiber of this thing and the fiber of this thing have to be the same. Can everybody see red? Is that a good color? I know you can't see because this is in the way, but okay. Now, here we have, so cyclic homology. By the way, I didn't say this, but I will. This is not homotopy Cartesian anymore, but the homotopy fiber of this is the infinitesimal K-theory of Cortinas, which we wrote about in the infinitesimal cohomology paper. And the point is that it satisfies CDH descent, and because this satisfies CDH descent, and that's the fibers of this, the fact that this square is homotopy Cartesian is equivalently represented by the fact that this is an isomorphism, which is in the infinitesimal cohomology paper, or that this is an isomorphism. Right? So this theorem is what's giving you this. Sorry? HN is negative cyclic homology, so it's going to be related to cyclic homology. Now again, Mark, plus one? Good. At this point, I think I'm using the geometer's conventions. Okay, so So when you compare cyclic homology to negative cyclic homology, the third term would be periodic cyclic homology, and periodic cyclic homology satisfies CVH descent. And because here's HP of X, and there's a shift which I'm going to drop, because it satisfies CVH descent. These are isomorphic, which is what proves that this is a homotopy Cartesian square. And that means that this is the same thing as FHC with a shift. And now you can play games with a shift and put it anywhere you want. But the way to remember this is that if you have a nilpotent ideal, the K-theory of the ring is going to be, so there's going to be nothing over here for nilpotent ideal. The K-theory of the ring is going to be all here. And pi n of this is the same thing as pi n of this, which is pi n minus 1 of the cyclic homology complex, which is HC minus 1. So Goodwillie's theorem is a way to check your indices on this. So these are all isomorphic. And then what we have coming in here is F of HH. And I guess it still has to be a 1 because of this one. So this is not an isomorphism when I just do this. But now the trick is that if I want to take N, H, C, M of R, it's isomorphic to N, H, C, whoops, H, H, M of R, modulo N, H, C, M minus 1 of R, and that is isomorphic to H, H, M of R, tensored with our very favorite TQT. So I apologize for writing small. So what happens is you start off with K-theory and a calculation you're trying to do in K-theory. When you're looking at the N-K-theory, there's nothing on the right-hand side because the right-hand side, well, there's nothing on the K-H side, but there will be stuff down here. So the N-K-theory lives in the red part. The red part comes down and becomes something that you can compute using hypercohomology of cyclic homology and hypercohomology of Hochschild homology. And the hypercohomology of the Hochschild homology, that is the thing that compares with the Hochschild homology and the Hochschild CVH homology. Now, up there, you see the H Hochschild, so there's Hochschild, and there's CDH, and that explains why in this range, where the Hochschild homology is 0, you're going to get the CDH homology. And in this range, where the CDH homology is equal to 0, you're going to get the Hochschild homology. And in this range, the two of them mix each other up a little bit. So here you have the kernel of the map from Hochschild homology to CDH homology, and here you have the co-kernel. And so that explains this little funny zone. And I think that's a good place to stop, so thank you very much. That, of course, if that were true, it would imply K regularity, yes, of course.
And then for non-finite things, you don't have any...
For things which are finite over the rational numbers, we have a bet going. Christian says it's true, and I say it's not. So we don't know. For arbitrary rings, we don't know. So the point is, what techniques am I using in here? I'm taking logarithms, I'm using resolution of singularities, I mean, eigenvalues for the Adams operations. There's so much stuff here that's depending on the rational numbers that, for example, if you're in characteristic P, it's just... Yes, so what... So here's a good research project, Max. The good research project is to develop CDH topology for non-commutative rings. So you can talk about these same words in the category in non-commutative ring theory. And if it's finite over a field, finite over a ring, then you can do this. That's the kind of stuff that was in Bass's book, for example, with group rings. So you could push all of this stuff through for group rings over with Q coefficients. But, I mean, where's the fun in that? I should also probably point out that if you believe in the Farrell-Jones conjecture and you're looking at group rings, then large portions of this follow from Farrell-Jones conjecture too. But that's a non-commutative thing.